If you understood what just happened, Jesus just told off the scribes and Pharisees, and it probably 30, 40 minutes before he hit them. He just told them that there's going to be some less desirable folks than them, in their opinion, get to heaven a whole lot quicker than they were. Can you imagine what went through their mind when he said that? Harlots and prostitutes, the less desirable get to heaven before me? Surely, Jesus, you must be kidding. What if you'd been a scribe or a Sadducee or Pharisee in those days? Would you have dealt well with that? What if someone said to you today that you're kind of like that son who said he would but didn't? And there's going to be some evil people get to heaven way before you do. How would you take that? Maybe we wouldn't take it too well. I don't know. But there are some cases in which this is so true, and I wanted to bring the lesson this morning based on this particular parable or this event, because we need to pay attention to what Jesus says here in this final verse. In verse 38. Is it 38 or am I lost? Hang on just a second. Matthew 31. I'm half lost. I'll catch myself. Verse 31 of that verse. Which of the two did the will of his father? They said to him, the first. Jesus said to them, assuredly I say to you, tax collectors and harlots enter the kingdom of God before you. What did he mean? What was the point of him telling that? Because the next parable does the same thing. You see, these guys were trying to find some evil in Jesus' life and his teaching. They were trying to find some fallacy in the things he said that they could put themselves above him and put him down in front of the people, and it just wasn't working. But why would he say this, that tax collectors and harlots would get to the kingdom of heaven before they did? They were the upper echelon, the hierarchy of the religious sect of that day, the Jewish faith. We're going to try to answer that question this morning as we go through this lesson. The question posed is a timeless question. Enemies were desperately trying to find sin in the life of Jesus Christ. The parable and the one that follows about the landowner expose the hypocrisy in their attitudes and in their very outlook on religion back in those days. But the question exists for us today. The question from God to us is, are you doing the will of the Father? That's what Jesus meant. There would be harlots and tax collectors that would gain entry into the kingdom of heaven before the Sadducees and the Pharisees and scribes of the day, because they were going to change where these guys weren't. They were going to be converted. Jesus knew that. He knew the hearts of folks back then. He could know who was going to be converted and who wasn't once they heard the gospel message, the good news. Put yourself in that blank spot right there. Are you doing the will of the Father? I put my name in there. You have to put your own in there. I'll take my name out real quick. So you can put yours there. Am I doing the will of the Father? How much of your week last week, now honestly answer this to yourself, no show of hands, no outpouring of vocal answers, how much of your week last week was taken up with the Lord's work? That's a fair question for any Christian to ask themselves. That's a fair question for any Christian to ask each other. Aren't we supposed to exhort each other and build each other up in the work and exhort each other to do more of the Lord's work and the Lord's bidding? And isn't it something we should do? Encourage one another? Well, if I came to you and asked you, how much of the time of last week did you devote to the Lord's work in an effort to exhort you to do more, wouldn't that be fair? I would hope it would. How much of the Lord's work are we doing? What could be more important than that? Why is the question asked? It's the only question that really matters. Think about it. What other question could we ask each other that really matters in the end result, in the long and the short of things? What other question would be more important to ask? The whole Bible is about doing the Lord's work, isn't it? Adam and Eve, from there down to the majority of the book of Revelation, everywhere in between, is about doing the will of God. God's will reigns supreme. God's will is the perfect will. We're to follow His will by doing what He would have us to do. Same way it was for Abraham. Abraham didn't hesitate. He just went right on, left his country, took his family, and hooked them. Knew God was going to show him the way to go, because God said He would. Well, for us, He's asked us to do basically the same thing. Just follow My will, and I'll get you there. Get you where? To the promised land. Same thing He told Abraham. See, the book of Kings is not really concerned about the outward good or bad that the kings did. Not really concerned with the successes or failures that the kings had. It's a great read. You should read 1 and 2 Kings. Put some time into it. But it's not really about the outward successes or failures. It's how they stuck up and stood up in reference to God's will. Now, they knew God's will. They knew of God's will. We're told by the Hebrew writer that God spoke in time past to the fathers by the prophets. The prophets had told them God's will. And yet, we can find in many cases where it just didn't work out that they did God's will. 1 Kings 11:4, for it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God as was the heart of his father David. 1 Kings 11:4. Something got in Solomon's way. Women, a bunch of them, 600 concubines, 300 wives, and they turned his heart away from God. 1 Kings 11, verse 38, then it shall be, if you heed that all that I command you, walk in My ways and do what is right in My sight, to keep My statutes and My commandments, as My servant David did, then I will be with you and build for you an enduring house, as I built for David, and He'll give Israel to you. That's what God had told him. But yet he was led away from God. 1 Kings 15, verses 1 to 3, we're talking about Jeroboam. In the 18th year of the king Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, Abijam became king over Judah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Maacah, granddaughter of Abishalom. And he walked in all the sins of his father, which he had done before him. His heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. It goes on and on and on. 1 Kings 15:11. Asa did what was right in the sight of the Lord, as his father David. Some did, some didn't. You know, people don't change much, do they? Today, some do, some don't. Jesus said only a few will, most won't. The New Testament times, not everyone who says to Me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. Then what does He say? But he who does the will of My Father. How many times have we looked at that verse last year? Then I did go back and count them, but I know a number of times. But he who does the will of My Father who is in heaven. It's not about just saying, Lord, I love You. Lord, I'll follow You anywhere. It's about doing what God has asked us to do. Most important fact that we emphasize with this lesson is doing the will of God is Christianity. How else do you explain what Christianity is? There's a lot of things we could say, but isn't this the most important thing we could say about Christianity? Is doing the will of God. Plain and simple. That's the highest achievement we can ever reach. No matter what else you do in this life, that is the very highest achievement you could possibly attain as far as God sees it, because that's what the Bible is about. What's your reason for being here? You ever considered that? Why are you here? Why am I here? Why are any of us here? Because God saw right to put us here. For what purpose? To have an easy time? That's what some people think. When things get a little tough, they say, oh man, what is this about? It was going so good yesterday. Live and let live. That's what the focus of some folks is. You do your thing, I'll do my thing. Live and let live. And there's been movies by that title, and we've come to understand that's just a way of looking at the world through some kind of rose-colored glasses, that you do your thing and I'll do my thing, and we can all just be good together. I don't think that's what your Bible teaches, but that's the outlook of some. To get the most out of this life, well, in a manner of speaking, Jesus did say, I come that they may have life and have it more abundantly, and that's for sure. But by and large, folks in this world, that's not what they mean when they say, we're here to get the most out of life. You've seen that bumper sticker that says, he who dies with the most toys wins? That's what they mean. Get all I can get while I'm here, because sometime the getting's going to be over with. Worldly success. You want to be an inventor? Well, you can do that. You can invent stuff. People do it all the time. And some people have invented some mighty wonderful things over the years. Like this. Like that. Stuff that helps us. Don't mean to put it down. But I don't care what you invent. I don't care where you go as far as a politician goes. Doesn't matter how much of a humanitarian you are. The highest level of achievement you can ever reach is doing the will of God. Period. And then how much of it do we do? How much is our focus focused on doing the will of God as opposed to doing these other things that are high and mighty things, politicians and inventors? And, you know, I'm not putting those folks down. Somebody's got to do that stuff. And they're a lot smarter than me to do those stuff. But if it's the highest achievement we can ever make, is to do God's will, isn't that just a lot simpler? Don't have to go to a big educated facility and a higher achievement facility to learn how to be a politician just to do God's will. It takes a little bit of politicking to do God's will sometimes. But you understand what I'm saying. What did Jesus say? Do you recall what he said in John 6? Take a look at it with me. John 6, verse 38. John 6, verse 38. What Jesus said about what his job was to do and why he was here on this planet. And I think it behooves us to emulate Jesus, according to what the Bible tells me, more than anybody else. If we're going to be like somebody, let's be like Jesus. John 6, 38, for I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. I want to do my Father's will. I want to do God's will. Recall then what he said in John 17, verse 4. Wasn't just a broad open statement. In John 17, verse 4, he kind of puts the period on the thought process about doing the Father's will. John 17, 4, I have glorified you on earth, Jesus says to the Father. I have finished the work which you have given me to do. He didn't just talk about it. He was about it. When he was 12 years old, his mom and daddy looking for him, didn't you know I must be about my Father's business, he said. He was back in the temple, learning and teaching. I came here from heaven, he said, to do my Father's will. And in the end result, I have done what you sent me to do. Oh, how many of us can make those statements? How many of us can even begin to make that final statement? I have done, I have finished the work that you gave me to do. We won't be able to say that till the day we leave this planet, but how many will be able to say, I did what you sent me here to do? How do you know what God sent you here to do? Because his word tells you. Seek and save the lost. Be benevolent. Tend to the widows and the orphans. Exhort one another. Teach, preach, baptize in the name of Jesus. See, he's told us what to do, and he didn't make it very difficult for us to understand. The command we have here, go to my vineyard to work. Very simple command. It'll take a rocket scientist to figure out what was said. Go to the vineyard. Go work. It was a command of a father, not a slave driver. It's one thing when a slave driver, if you're a slave, he tells you, go work in my vineyard. You don't have a choice. It's an unpleasant choice, I guess you have, if you want to get beat. But you don't have a choice, basically, if you don't want to get beat. You just go to work in the wherever he sent you. But not a father-son. I remember a lot of times when I was growing up, Dad told me to go do something. I said, didn't really want to, but I knew it'd be better off for me if I did. I see some of you grinning. You've been there, done that. Vineyard. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 9. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. You are God's vineyard. That's what Paul said, talking to the church at Corinth in the first century. So the church and the vineyard, in this analogy, same, same. So when the Father says to us, go work in my vineyard, and we say, I will, I want to be a Christian, I'll go do that, because that's what Christians do, I want to go do that. And we say, I will, which son have you become? The one who said, I will, but didn't, or the one who says, I won't, but did? Another fair question. Every one of us is one of those boys. Every one of us. Today is the day to do the work. John 9, verse 4, I must do the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. There's coming a time when the work's done. We have X amount of days, X amount of hours, X amount of minutes to do the work. Problem is, we don't know how long that is, do we? I don't know how many days I got. You don't know how many days you've got. Today might be the last for some of us. Somebody in here could not be here tomorrow. I don't know. It's very possible. What did we do last week in the way of working in the vineyard that we needed to have gotten done? If we don't get a chance this week. It says here, the fool is so busy seeking the distant that he forgets the here and now. Simply means that it's a foolish thing to look down the road toward the future if we're not paying attention to what's right in front of us. I think we all do that to a certain point. We all plan for the future. We all want to make sure that our future is kind of taken care of down the road. When it gets to be retirement age, we want to be sure we're ready. When it gets to be time to go take a vacation, we want to be sure everything's tied up around the house, everything's done. But what if that vacation time never gets here? What if we never see retirement? What have we done in the meantime that we should have gotten taken care of? Proverbs 17, verse 24, interesting passage. Wisdom is in the sight of him who has understanding, but the eyes of a fool are on the ends of the earth. Basically says the same thing that we just said. The fool is busy seeking what's in the distance instead of what's in front of him, the here and now. God says it's a fool who has his eyes on the ends of the earth and not here to gain understanding in the here and now. This command, go to work in the garden, it recognizes the opportunity of personal freedom. These two sons had the opportunity and the freedom to say yes or no. As we see, one said one said the other. The father didn't force either one of them to go to work in the vineyard. Just asked that they would. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 20, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I'll come in him and dine with him and he with me. It's not a command. You get the commands once you become a Christian. Once you become a child of God, we talked about in Bible class this morning, the Jewish race, they were born children of God and then learned what that meant. Today, under this New Testament, New Covenant, we learn what that means. Then we're born into God's family through baptism, being reborn. It's a little difference. Everybody knows that becomes a Christian what's expected of them in a manner of speaking, to do the will of the Father, to do what Christians do. And we all, in fact, the day we were baptized, says, I'll go, every one of us. I don't think anyone who was ever baptized, maybe baptized with the wrong attitude, the wrong idea, wrong understanding, but if we knew the reason to be baptized, the reason to become a Christian, not one of us would have said, you know, I'll go into the water, but I don't really want to go do that stuff. I don't really want to teach anybody about the gospel. I don't really want to tell anybody what the Bible is. Just let them find out for them. We wouldn't have said that for anything. I couldn't wait to tell people. Maybe you were the same way. People probably got tired of hearing, oh, here comes Joe again. He's going to tell us about God. He'll tell us about baptism. He's baptized last week. You know he's going to tell you about that again. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what Christians do. The response is, we got the response from the second son. The second son was quite courteous. I'll go. Yes, sir. I'll go do that. Seemed respectful, but how disappointing. The problem was not his quick reply to go do the work, but his failure to actually go do what the father wanted him to do. You know, everything else is meaningless without obedience. We can say whatever we want to say, but until we begin to do, isn't that what James said back in James chapter 1, being about not being just hearers of the word, but being doers of the word? First son's response was a little shocking. No, I'm not going. Well, you wouldn't have told my daddy that. Maybe some of yours you wouldn't have told that either, but he says, I'm not going. But, you know, maybe other than the hateful, ugly reply, that what it was, no respect or no sign of respect or a hint of obedience, he maybe for whatever reason changed his mind, and I don't know what it was. It could have been the bad look, the sad look on the father's face when he said, no, I'm not going. Could have just been a conscious thing. Did he remember the father's sacrifices that were made for him? That's what changed his mind? But whatever the reason, he changed his mind. He knew better. He knew, I need to go and do that. I need to go work in the vineyard. And we all appreciate his conduct, his attitude. Why is that? Why do you like that son over the other one? Why do you not like the one that says, yes, sir, I'll go, and then didn't go? We don't care much for him. But this other guy, we like him. He's a good kid. He said no, but he went anyway. He changed his mind. Wasn't his reply. Wasn't his delay. It was the fact that he repented of his ugly, shameful conduct and went and worked in the vineyard. He said, yeah, I'll go, instead of no. In the end result. But what about personal conduct? What about we bring this home to you and I? God commands that we all go to work in his vineyard, not just one or two of us, not just preachers, not just Bible class teachers, not just everyone. If you're a Christian this morning, you're supposed to be working in the vineyard, period. That's it. What's your answer? When God chose you to become a Christian and wanted you to go to work in his vineyard, what did you tell him? Did you tell him out and out? No. Probably not. Did you say yes? Probably so. But then failed to act as the first son? Or did you say yes and then began to do and still do what God wanted done? Let's go back to that. If you had to give this answer today, what answer would you be able to give honestly and truthfully? And whether you know it or not, you give this answer every day. It's not an open question, but God sees. God knows. Jesus knows. Are you doing the work? Are you in the vineyard? Are you even bothering to go to the vineyard? You walk out your door, you're in the vineyard. First person you meet that day, you're in the vineyard. First person you encounter the day you get up and walk out that door is an opportunity to work in the vineyard. And I think all too often we let that opportunity go by us without really being conscious of the fact that it was right in front of us. I had an opportunity. Willie Franklin, I think I've told you before, prays that prayer. He says every morning when he gets up, Lord, lead me to just one soul today. Usually he ends up finding somebody to talk to about the gospel. Doesn't always have people converted because of it, but he has the opportunity. God never said that the majority of people you talk to will be converted to the gospel. He never said that. Matter of fact, Jesus said just the opposite. I mentioned a minute ago, few there be that find that narrow way. Many there be that find that broad way. Sometimes I think we know which ones will respond and which ones won't respond. I can't talk to that and they don't look just right. I won't talk to this one. They're pretty, or whatever it is. It's not our job to judge the soil in the vineyard. It's not our job to judge anything about the work in the vineyard except that we need to go do it. And far too many of us, I'm afraid, have fallen down on the job just like that first son. We said yes, but then we failed to work. If that's you this morning, maybe you need to repent of that. Maybe you need to get back to work in the vineyard. And if there's anything we can do to help you with that work, we'll provide you with all the tools we humanly can. God will provide you with all the tools that he spiritually can. He will give you all the ammunition that you need and all the help that you need and all the knowledge that you need if you just work in that vineyard. Through prayer, through diligent effort. That's all it takes. It's funny, we can talk to people about everything else under the sun, but we find it really, really hard to talk to people about Jesus or the church. Maybe it's a fear we have. Maybe it's just that we know people don't like that sort of thing. There's even a group of men who meet on a regular basis that they don't even allow you to speak about church or politics, religion or politics, in that forum, in that group, when they're meeting together. Why not? Maybe that should be the main things we do talk about. Because if there was more religion in politics, we'd be a lot better off. But where are you this morning? Are you doing the work? Are you doing the work in the vineyard or not? You either are or you aren't. It's not a part-time thing. It's a full-time thing. And as I said, if you need some assistance with the work, please make that known to us. It's not magic. It takes a little work, a little diligence, but it can be done because God said it could. Maybe you've been working in the vineyard and maybe you've got a bad attitude because everybody keeps telling you no. No, no, no. Every time I speak to somebody about Jesus or about the cross, they don't want to hear it. Well, that's their option. That's not your job to force it on them. The Father didn't force the sons to go to work. He gave them the opportunity. That's all we do. We give people the opportunity to obey the gospel. If they choose to obey, it's a great deal. If they choose not to obey, keep praying for them. Maybe try later. Are you working or are you not? Do you need some help? We can help you with it. Are you even a Christian yet this morning? Maybe you're not a Christian this morning. Maybe you can't work in the vineyard because you've never been obedient to the gospel. If that's you, then why would you wait another day? It's wide open. Now's the time. Today's the day of salvation if you're not a Christian. Maybe you don't know if you're a Christian or not. Maybe you've had some doubt about that. There could be any number of things on your heart and mind this morning. And if you don't respond with that, make it known. It may never get any better. Why would you just stay in the same old? Take the opportunity this morning while we stand together and while we sing.